the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello again and welcome to the show. Coming up, a call for the Water Minister Rose Jackson to impose a floodplain harvesting embargo due to some legal uncertainties about the laws and also the regulations. And country music icon and headline act at Tamworth Country Music Festival, Dolly Parton, has died aged 80.
I first went on the road with Dolly as a kid, getting a taste of the road life in the early 1980s. Dolly opened doors not just for me, but for her entire family to reach the potential we didn't even know was possible. Dolly also opened doors for generations of singers, songwriters, musicians, and dreamers from every walk of life and across every continent.
You can always send us your comments, 0467 922 684. That's the number to text us here at the Country Hour. But first up today, there are calls today for the Minister for Water, Rose Jackson, to impose an immediate Section 324 embargo on all floodplain harvesting in New South Wales. This follows revelations in budget estimates on the 19th of August that the Greens say shows the current regulatory framework is so fundamentally flawed that compliance cannot be reliably enforced. Greens water spokesperson Kate Fairman says floodplain harvesting significantly reduces downstream flows, degrades river health, and undermines the ecological, cultural, and economic foundations of communities across the basin. Also, they argue that an embargo is essential as a functional, enforceable regulatory framework that's in place to manage expectations and prevent upstream irrigators from extracting potentially huge volumes of off-river pools unchecked. Dr. Emma Carmody is Commissioner for the River Murray in South Australia, and she says the budget estimates revelations are alarming, that all basin states are affected, and maybe the federal government should step in and protect the river and the basin.
I have to say, I was particularly troubled that 10 years after the Four Corners episode pumped, after Ken Matthews' inquiry and his reports, after the creation of the Natural Resources Access Regulator, or the NRAR, the creation of a basin-wide compliance compact, the establishment of the Office of the Inspector General of Water Compliance for the entire basin, after all of that, the Chief Regulatory Officer for the NRAR declared in Parliament that he lacked the regulatory clarity to enforce the law in relation to floodplain harvesting licences. I found that extremely troubling and, quite frankly, an extraordinary revelation.
Yes, he said that there was a lot of confusion about his legal standing. 10 years on, that's a problem?
Well, it's a significant problem. The assumption was that compliance and enforcement had been adequately addressed following PUMPT. And here we are in relation to what I think is self-evidently a very contentious form of extraction. The Chief Regulatory Officer is saying that he lacks the clarity required to enforce the law and meet the criminal burden of proof. Now, it's not to say that anyone's breaking the law, but the fact that the regulators said that they don't have the regulatory tools at the moment to enforce the law is deeply problematic. What he said was that as a consequence of two court cases, he lacked the clarity, and where there's a lack of clarity, or I think the word he used was uncertainty, it's very difficult to act as a regulator and it's very difficult to meet the criminal burden of proof. I mean, as a lawyer, I take that as a fairly clear message that he feels that he's not in a position in all instances to enforce the law in relation to floodplain harvesting licences. But I think we'd all welcome some clearer statements from the government about what the situation is in that regard.
The concern there is that more water may well be taken out of the river during floodplain harvesting events. What does that, as a result of that legal uncertainty, I think that's a fair assumption to make. What concerns do you have from South Australia's point of view about the volume of water in the river, what it might mean for the environment, what it might mean for fish kills, what it might mean for town water and water going down into the lower part of the basin into South Australia?
Look, Michael, it's well established that floodplain harvesting is a very contentious form of take. The reform process and the licensing that formed part of that was extremely fraught. And many downstream communities and organisations were on the record and are on the record saying that they think that the volumes that have been licensed are far too large, that they're unsustainable, and that they have impacts on the health of the river and on the viability of downstream businesses, for example, graziers, but also on cultural rights. So that's a problem not just for South Australia, but start in the Darling Barker River. It's an issue for the Menindee Lakes and the communities around there. But then, of course, it's hydrologically connected to the River Murray. So that affects the communities and the river system down in South Australia as well.
And South Australia has a very tight system of regulation.
South Australia introduced a cap on extractions in 1969. The irrigators down there are extremely efficient. Everything is metered. And in fact, the sustainable diversion limit for the entire Murray-Darling Basin component of South Australia is only around 600 gigalitres. It's a really small volume of water relative to the amount that's extracted across the entire basin. For South Australians to gaze northward and see these very large volumes being licensed for floodplain harvesting, but on top of that, question marks raised by the Chief Regulatory Officer about the state's ability to enforce the law in relation to those licences, it's concerning, but it's also perplexing again, because here we are 10 years after pumped and there are compliance and enforcement issues being raised again in New South Wales.
And on that, what does that mean? What does that those question marks about enforcement mean for not just for those irrigators involved in floodplain harvesting, but the industry generally and the social licence?
Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say that compliance and enforcement is the bedrock of social licence. That's really all I'll say, and I think that that's a fairly self-evident statement.
There are concerns too about the amount of water that may be taken in the event of a rain event or in the lead up to some sort of rain event as well. What would you, from South Australia's point of view, what would you be saying to the minister about safeguarding the supply of water to the river?
I mean, I think clearly if there's some systemic regulatory issues, they need to be addressed. I don't know how long that will take. There is a discretionary power, though, under the Water Management Act, which does enable the minister to impose an embargo on extractions. The minister may consider using that power in those circumstances, but that would be at her discretion.
She could impose an embargo now, even before a rain event, or foreshadow it too.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But I think I can imagine it's in everybody's interest to try and resolve this issue as quickly as possible, because everybody wants some certainty and wants to know that the law is capable of being enforced.
But in the past, when embargoes have been imposed, there was a lot of criticism of the minister doing that.
Yes. Although, look, it's important to note that embargoes have been imposed by ministers on both sides of the political aisle. It hasn't just been this minister. So, again, that's a discretionary power that she's able to use if she decides that that's the best course of action.
Now, I know you don't really want to talk about individual court cases, but there are two court cases that the New South Wales government lost against irrigators over laws and regulation. There's another three or four that are outstanding. What does that say about the legal framework we're in at the moment?
That there are problems that need to be addressed, Michael, yes.
So we've talked about New South Wales, we've talked about South Australia's view. Is there a role for the federal government here to step in?
Look, it's a good question. We are in the middle of reviews of both the Federal Water Act and the Basin Plan. And I'd just note that in New South Wales, water resource plans were lodged significantly after the statutory deadline, and in fact there are still some that haven't been lodged as per the statutory requirement. We've had SIDLAM projects, so the water offset projects, set aside, or they will be set aside because they won't comply with the necessary legal framework. We've had the Inspector General's report on the so-called toolkit measures, which form part of the quid pro quo for a 70 gigalitre reduction in environmental flows in the Northern Basin, and now we've got this question mark over compliance and enforcement in relation to floodplain harvesting licences. What I would say to the federal government is, at what point do we put an end to the constant compromises and concessions, and at what point does it just stand up and say we have to enforce the law and ensure that the Basin Plan creates a healthy river system for communities today and in the future?
And so we're not just talking about New South Wales, the impacts here from this?
No, I mean, it's a good question. We are in the middle of two reforms, or two reviews, which will lead to reforms, a review of the Federal Water Act and a review of the Basin Plan. And I think it's pertinent to note that New South Wales failed to submit its water resource plans on time. Many of them, in fact, were submitted several years after the deadline, and there's still a number of them that are outstanding. Many of its so-called SIDLAM, or water offset projects, are going to have to be set aside because they don't comply with the federal statutory framework. We've had the Inspector General's, what I would characterise as a damning report on the so-called toolkit measures in the Northern Basin, which form part of a quid pro quo for a 70 gigalitre reduction in environmental flows up there in the north. And now we've got this question mark over compliance and enforcement in relation to floodplain harvesting licences. You really don't need a PhD in pattern recognition to see that these aren't isolated incidences. In fact, it's part of a really systemic problem. But the Commonwealth Government really has to put an end to the constant concessions and compromises and just stand up for a healthy basin. That's what I would say is particularly relevant right now at a basin scale.
Emma Carmody is the Commissioner for the River Murray in South Australia, and we're getting a whole bunch of texts about that. Someone's saying, how much water does South Australia need before they remove the barrages, says Reg. And Michael has texted in to say South Australia contributes 7% of the water to the Murray-Darling Basin, but they have 85% control over the Murray-Darling Basin Authority. I'm not sure where those figures come from, but anyway, it's coming up to 18 minutes past 12.
Every community has stories worth sharing. ABC Your Say is your chance to join the conversation. Tell us what's on your mind. Visit abc.net.au/yoursay.
To rain now, and good falls of an inch or two around Narrabri overnight. It's been very welcome, said to be a saviour to crops ahead of the harvest. But like all good storms, they've been patchy, and it won't get everyone out of the woods, or they didn't quite get enough. Narrabri-based agronomist Mitch Kuehl says another fall would be a bonus, but overnight rain will certainly go a long way.
In our particular area here in Narrabri, north of Narrabri, anywhere from 20 mil to through 50 millimetres of rain, so really, really good drop.
We've had little bits of rain here and there, nothing super massive. Is this what's going to help farmers get over that last little line? Will this good bit of rain in the past 24 hours be helpful?
Oh, absolutely. In our neck of the woods here, we've been quite lucky in this sort of 50k radius patch where we got a fair bit of cropping off the May June rain. We've bounced the crop along till now, and you know we got 20 mils last Friday, and then another 20 to 30 mils last night. That's enough to get our crop home in our neck of the woods. You know, you go further afield, either west or north of my patch here, and it's probably a little bit of a different story.
What does this mean for farmers heading into spring? Will this give them a little bit of extra confidence?
Oh, yeah, as confident as you can be with the weather forecast at the moment. It's all pretty negative, but at the end of the day, we look what water we got in the soil, and we've got a bit of moisture there to finish the crop. Any more would be fantastic.
So how much more rain do farmers need to get them over the line? Will this be enough? Or, I mean, there's no crystal ball and we're always hoping for more rain, but is more on the wish list?
Oh, look, in our patch here in Narrabri, like I said before, we're pretty lucky that rain will finish the crop. Like, we'll have headers out of the shed for that. So you know, another fall, if we get another fall in the next, let's say, 2 weeks, then we'd be looking at an average sort of yield in our neck of the woods. So that'd be a bonus if we can get that. But like I said before, it's a very small patch where we are. You go further west and it's a lot more marginal, no cropping at all. And further north, it's really pinching off. So quite lucky in that respect where we are.
Agronomist Mitch Kuehl, Director of Outlook Ag, speaking to Bridget Murphy.
The New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
To bananas now, and banana growers on the mid-north coast are questioning their future with Coles set to stop stocking their produce in the local stores. The supermarket giant is ending its contract with local wholesaler Golden Dawn, which provides bananas, cucumbers and pumpkins from local growers direct to stores on the mid-north coast. Coffs Harbour banana grower Dominic Canal says that his family has been supplying Coles via the wholesaler for as long as he can remember.
I've been home from school for 14 years now. It's been always like that since I've known it, and I think for Dad as well, and even probably my granddad, I'm not too sure, but it's been, yeah, a long relationship.
How much of your business did that Coles contract make up? Like, is that most of your bananas going to Coles, or is there a bit of a spread?
No, there would be a spread. I'm not sure to what extent. Like, it goes Coles, Woolies, other little shops, IGA. It goes all around. But it's up and down the coast, like from down to Port Macquarie or Newcastle, maybe up to Yamba, our fruit goes.
Now that, I guess, Coles has been taken out of that equation, what does that mean for you and your produce?
Yeah, look, I'm not too sure. We'll know more probably come summer. I'm hoping not too much of it needs to go down in the markets in Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane, because you always get a lot less of a return when they go into those sort of places. When you got like your chain stores and like your big shops locally that take X amount of fruit every week, it's like more of a guaranteed price, where when you send to the markets, everyone sends to those markets when there's a glut, wherever they come from, might be North Queensland, up and down the coast, anywhere. So overnight, semi-trailers could reach the market, and the day that your fruit's there, the price could crash, you know, like it's just unpredictable. It's not, you don't really know what's going to happen.
Are you worried about, like, not being able to move bananas, or is the risk more that you'll be getting a really low price that you won't really be making a profit on them?
That's right, yeah. Like, you're always going to be able to move them, but at what price? And, you know, it has happened in the past, but if we get like them returns of like $10, $12 again, we probably won't send them. Like, you'd probably just cut the fruit on the ground, because of the cost of everything these days. You wouldn't do it for that.
Yeah, right. So you'll be continuing your arrangement with Golden Dawn, with this wholesaler?
Yes, we will, for sure.
Did you think about the possibility of supplying to Coles National Distribution System? Is that an option?
Well, it would be great if it was, if we were able to, but I don't know where, I don't know if they would worry about little family businesses with that. They like to deal with just big, real big fellas, so I'm not too sure. It'd be definitely worth looking into, I would imagine.
Yeah, New South Wales Farmers has said that Woolies has been quite good, that they've said that they will try to find space for more local produce in the region. Is that what you're hearing, and how are you feeling about that?
Yes, that's what I am hearing, and we've changed box to a different style and everything for Woolies, and they seem to be a lot more supportive of local fruit, and I really hope that's the case, because me and my brother are fourth generation here on the farm, and my wife's in it now too, and we've got two little kids. If it stays sustainable enough, you know, I'd love for the kids to have the opportunity to take on the farm in the future too, so I'm really hoping that's the case.
As Coffs Harbour banana grower Dominic Canali speaking there to Lauren Bohane, it's coming up to 25 minutes past 12.
You're with Michael Condon for the New South Wales Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, the New South Wales Agriculture Minister says the state's coordination centre in Orange that was set up to handle the rising number of bird flu cases has fielded more than 5,000 calls since its telephone hotline was set up encouraging people to report sightings of dead birds. So far, the state has recorded 14 confirmed cases of H5 bird flu, with the majority of cases on the far south coast. Tara Moriarty says she's encouraging backyard chicken and captive bird owners to take biosecurity measures to reduce the risk of birds being infected. She also said the vaccine rollout of high-risk species is beginning this week.
So we're looking to start where animals are contained. So zoos, Taronga Zoo, and places where we've got high-risk species that would otherwise be significantly under threat, but they're in controlled environments, and we'll be starting with those animals that are in captivity.
Are there birds that are of a particular concern that have higher priority than some other birds?
It's birds that are at risk of extinction, or that are at risk, more vulnerable in terms of their numbers across New South Wales. So if the worst does happen and we do see a spread and mass deaths of birds, we want to make sure that we're protecting certain vulnerable species of birds so that they're not wiped out.
Is New South Wales prepared for if we have a mass casualty event like we've seen in South Australia?
We are. We've been preparing for this strain of bird flu for a couple of years now. We've been working very closely with industry, and I want to thank industry who've been working closely with the government to make sure that we've got preparedness plans in place and people have biosecurity controls in place on their properties to deal with birds. We're seeing this disease, this virus, hit some wild birds, which is devastating, but it is really difficult to be able to manage this issue across in the wild. So that's why where we can control animals, so today we're talking to people who have backyard chickens, for example, and pets, put your protections and plans in place to make sure that they're at less risk of being exposed to this virus.
New South Wales Agriculture Minister Tara Moriarty speaking from Orange earlier today. So 5,000 calls to the telephone hotline, and that hotline number is 1-800-675-888. We're still on bird flu. There's nothing quite like walking through a poultry shed at a small agricultural show and seeing all the different breeds of birds. It is an amazing sight to see. Some balls of fluff, others with multicoloured feathers, and perhaps a bit of a noisy rooster in the corner. Well, James Turtle and his son Bill breed chickens for showing near Wagga Wagga. 11-year-old Bill won both the champion and reserve champion birds in the juniors exhibitors section at the Ganmain show on the weekend. And he told our reporter Emily Doak all about his prize-winning entry.
Looking at that beautiful bird that you just got out and showed me, describe the feathers for me, because they weren't just black, particularly around its neck and on its wings. What makes it special?
It has lots of white spots and big, beautiful tail feathers.
And a slight green tinge to some of the feathers too. That's amazing. Is that particular for that type of breed of bird?
Most blackbirds, but yeah, Anconas have it, yeah, mostly.
So when you were deciding what sorts of chickens you wanted to breed, how did you make the choice?
My dad found them and I liked it and they looked cool. I've got Anconas, I've got Langshans, I've got Australorps, Japanese Bantams, Leghorns, Old English Game.
That's quite a collection. What is your favourite of all of those breeds?
Probably the Langshan. I've got 4 black ones and 3 blue ones.
How much work is it for you to look after the chickens at your house?
Kind of a lot of work. Feed them, water them every day, look after them. But when you're getting them ready for the show, we just clean their feet and then put some oil on their comb to make them look shiny. And then that's really it.
Oh, what are the judges looking for when they're judging your chickens?
Judging against the standard of poultry. And they look for presentation and how the birds look and how their wings look and if they're all good.
Now, James, obviously this is a bit of a shared passion. I understand that you also showed poultry when you were younger.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I did a long time ago. And then when Bill showed a bit of interest, it was kind of nice to get back into it with him. It's been really encouraging for us with Bill, the fact that he gets to interact with lots of different people of all different ages. He's met some kids who are younger than him, but he's met adults who are older than me, who've been really, really kind to him, who've shared lots of information. They've shared birds with him. So it's just, I guess it's that real, they like to see those younger kids coming through. Bill has a great time. He's wandering the shed constantly. We went to Canberra this year and he was just blown away, 2,500 chooks in the shed, and he was just, yeah, in his own world, just wandering around having a great time.
And of course, you're talking about some pretty unusual breeds here. How do you go about sourcing the chickens or the eggs to be able to sort of expand your little flock, I suppose? And is it a bit like, you know, you spot something new and then you want to try that as well?
Oh, look, chicken match is real. My wife regularly says to us, please don't come home with any more than you went with. But yeah, look, when it comes to finding some of those breeds, yeah, we are breeding some stuff that isn't terribly common. But again, that community, you start talking to people about who's got what, you'll invariably find what you're looking for. And as I said before, like, a lot of people have been really, really good to him. So yeah, we have to thank all of those people who've donated birds to him, who've allowed him to breed his own and get to the point where he's showing some of the stuff that he's bred as well.
Of course, I'd imagine it'd be a bit of a nervy time for people involved in poultry breeding and showing, with the bird flu being detected in wild bird populations in all states, I think, now. You know, is that something that, as a local breeder, you're keeping an eye on and you've taken measures in your own operations?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that's at front of mind, absolutely. So we are, any of Bill's breeding stock are all in fully enclosed cages, so wild birds can't get in. And there's still little measures you'll take to try and make sure that they can't contaminate food or water, any of those sorts of things. I guess we're taking advice to those who do this for a living. So from our perspective, if there's advice that says don't be attending things like local shows, we certainly won't be, and I don't think we'll be doing too many ag shows this season because lots of them have already been cancelled as well. So we'll just start the breeding season earlier.
James Turtle, who along with his son Bill runs Prickle Farm Poultry near Wagga, breeding and showing chickens. And yeah, some of those shows are talking about stopping the show this year because of bird flu. So I think they've made decisions in some of the smaller shows in northern Victoria. So all eyes will be on the Canberra show and also the Sydney Royal as well. So we'll see what happens with the showing of poultry this year because of bird flu. It's coming up to 28 minutes to one here on the New South Wales Country Hour. Now I'm joined now by Adam Storey for the news headlines. Now, Adam, I've got a question for this for you today.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Did you tumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen to pour yourself a cup of ambition today?
How do you know my morning routine?
Boom, boom.
Need about two or three cups of ambition.
And oh, yes, you're doing all right.
Yeah, yawn and stretch and try to come alive.
That's
yeah.
right, correct.
And then I heard the sad news that, yes,
Dolly Parton
has left us at the age of 80 after her brief battle with cancer. Tributes pouring in, of course, from around the world. There has been a laying of flowers at a Dolly Parton statue, which is in her hometown of Tennessee, and fans have also gathered at her Hollywood Walk of Fame star in Hollywood, obviously.
Yep.
and the Prime Minister has also paid tribute, saying she made the world a better place in so many ways. And, yeah, some great songs.
Great philanthropist as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Literacy and giving free books away to kids all over the world.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, sadly missed. To the other news today, headline inflation has risen to 3.5% in the 12 months to July. Now, that's compared to 3.8% last month. However, trim mean inflation, which removes what they say is the more volatile data, is still at around 3.6%, and that's well above the target range of 2-3% for the Reserve Bank. Apparently the biggest contributors in July to inflation were housing, food, non-alcoholic beverages and recreation. The Northern Territory MP Luke Gosling says he will stand down from his special envoy positions for Defence, Veterans Affairs and Northern Australia until allegations of assault and breach of bail are heard in court. Yesterday, Mr. Gosling was charged with breaching his bail conditions, which were set by the court following his alleged assault against the Northern Territory Administrator David Connolly at a community festival last month. National Cabinet meets this afternoon to settle new rules for how data centres use energy. That's despite opposition from Queensland and the Northern Territory. Data centres operators are calling for certainty from government on the energy rules, saying they'd prefer one set of rules for the whole country. That'll be on this afternoon, and we'll probably get a press conference from the Prime Minister and the Premiers after that.
Yes, indeed, to see what decisions are made. There's quite a bit of discussion at Federal Cabinet today.
A few other issues on the agenda as well.
Yes, indeed. All right, thanks for that, and we'll be back at 1 o'clock.
I shall.
Okay, it's 25 minutes to one here on the New South Wales Country Hour. Let's find out what's happening with the weather details now, and we're joined now by Jordan Natara. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Michael.
So we've seen getting some reports here. Dave in Trundle said he got 18 millimetres at Trundle. He said it was better than nothing, but another 20 or 40 would have been ideal, and 22 millimetres at Yass for yesterday as well. They were pretty happy with that. So has all that rain moved through now, Jordan?
Yeah, a vast majority has. So the more rainy kind of signatures that we had seen on the radar yesterday have now moved to more scattered showers across some parts of the coast and into parts of the mid-north coast as well. And as you mentioned, we did see some quite relatively good falls in parts. Orange in particular getting the highest 290 in this morning of over 50 millimetres in the area. Tamworth getting to around 45 millimetres as well. And as for what we're expecting for the remainder of today, we are looking at some, again, isolated showers and storms being the driver of the remainder of today's weather, mainly focused around parts of the mid-north coast and in those areas around Coffs and Dorigo, where we're going to see the Rangers playing their part to see some higher potential storm activity in those parts of the coast. And that is really, again, associated with the same weather feature as we saw moving through yesterday. The anticipations are that we are just going to see that much more isolated compared to what we did see come across the state through the last 24 hours. The weather itself is still going to be moving through as we get through the early parts of Thursday, though by remainder of Thursday through the remainder of the week into the weekend, we are moving back to more stable weather across the state. So a couple of isolated showers around parts of the coast is what we're going to see in the wake of this system. But for broader areas of the coast and the state as a whole, it is a return to more clear skies. Frosty mornings in a very small amount of the area, but again, some relatively warmer temperatures at daytime throughout the remainder of the week and into the weekend.
Yeah, so that system moving through, moving out of the state, what's going to be the main feature for the next few days after that system moves through, or are we seeing more systems coming in?
No, so the system that we're moving through at the moment is going to be our main weather-bearing system for the showers side of things. From the longer term, as we move through Thursday towards the weekend and even into early parts of next week, we're moving back into a broad area of high pressure, so still seeing some coastal showers just due to the onshore winds. But for mainly the entirety of the parts of the state, we're seeing clear skies. Again, the warming temperatures is going to be a trend that we are going to see at the moment. So temperatures are starting to edge more towards what we'd be expecting for spring at the moment. So a bit earlier than we'd be, say, typical for this time of year. But the trend itself is for a more settled weather across the state, with that warming trend particularly notable as we head towards the later part of the weekend.
So warming, not much rain in it, and warming during the day, sunny as well?
Yeah, so clear sky days for a much more large part of the inland. A couple of showers and some cloudy conditions in some spots along the coast. Again, not expecting higher totals whatsoever. Maybe a millimetre at most outside the system. We've got obviously for today and early parts of tomorrow, but the remainder Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, if we do see any showers along the coast, again, very light rain if we do see that at all. And again, the remainder of the state being in clear sky conditions and some quite warm temperatures as well coming across the state in some spots.
Yeah, so how warm is it going to get?
So maximum temperatures, particularly as we head into the outlook, we see that trend edging towards those warmer anomalies. Temperatures heading into the mid to higher 20s in parts of the northern inland, so all the way through Cobar and edging down further towards Broken Hill, sort of in that sort of mid-20s range, which again starts to edge more towards the spring-like temperatures that we're expecting. And then by Tuesday, still again getting towards the higher 20s, if not maybe even getting a potential observation of 30 degrees forecast in that far northwestern corner of New South Wales. And those warm temperatures also being felt along broad parts of the state around the east, so mid-20 degree temperatures, and even into some maybe higher 20 degree temperatures in parts of the coast as well. So still quite a significantly warming trend, particularly as we head through to the last week of August into the early parts of our sort of spring-like weather conditions.
Yes, it's sort of a little bit of an early spring. So what about frosts? Are we likely to see many frosts, or is it not going to get down that cold overnight?
Early frosts, again, far southern ranges is going to be our only area we're going to be seeing those frosty-like conditions. The entirety of the ranges from to the north of Canberra are not expecting to see sub-zero temperatures for the remainder of the outlook. So it does look like we may have actually seen the last of the frost from many parts of the state outside those more elevated topography in our south. But that being it is, obviously, there obviously has the potential we could see some very localised topography bringing those cooler temperatures in some spots. But really the reality is that we are starting to see an early shift towards more spring-like temperatures, and the weather patterns themselves, obviously, at the moment, moving into, again, that period of more settled-like conditions. And based on our forecast outlook, again, it could be one that will be a continual trend as we go through spring as well, with these relatively dry conditions across the state, warmer than average temperatures as well, seeing, again, that picture coming into our forecast as we move towards those first days of September at the moment.
Which is what the longer term forecasts had been saying. And so this hybrid system is going to hang around for 4 or 5 or 6 days then?
Has the potential to, yeah. So no significant shift in our weather patterns by the looks of things in our longer-term forecast out to the seven-day forecast itself. At the moment, really, this very slow-moving high-pressure system is going to be our main weather pattern as we move from Friday and beyond. And at this stage, it is going to be one that's going to be sufficiently slow enough that we aren't going to be seeing any strong shift in weather for more additional rainfall at the moment based on that current forecast.
Jordan, thanks for that.
Catch you later, Michael.
It's coming up to 18 minutes to one.
You're listening to The Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello, I'm Andy Park. Join me for The World Today. Rest in peace, Dolly Parton tributes flow for the country music legend, dead at age 80. Meanwhile, the UN has issued a stark warning about the urgent need for laws to ban autonomous weapons systems. New research into former NFL players shows at least a quarter of those players can expect to be diagnosed with CTE. And the Anti-Semitism Royal Commission hearings conclude today after 300 witnesses and more than 20,000 submissions. Those stories and more. Join me for The World Today.
But here on The Country Hour, Australian, American country music legend Dolly Parton has died at the age of 80. She was a beloved icon and philanthropist. Parton was also one of the most recognisable stars of the country music world for decades, with deep roots in country life. Growing up on a small farm in Tennessee, David Claughton reports on her death and the impact she had here in regional Australia.
My coat of many colours that my mama made for me, made only from rain.
Dolly's nephew, Brian Seaver, made the announcement on social media and spoke about her roots.
Dolly was a farmer, just like her daddy. He farmed the soil, she farmed songs and happiness.
The day after her high school graduation, she left home to go to Nashville and became a big country music star. She was also hugely successful in the pop charts, on TV and in films, but she never forgot where she came from.
I love country music. I feel that I myself have hopefully enough talent to branch out and do other things, but there's nothing that means as much to me really as the country feeling, and it's important to me that my people always stay proud of me. My family is very large and they're very down-home people, and even if I tried to get a little above my raising, they would remind me that that's not the thing for me to do, and my mom would slap my hair off.
Dolly visited Australia in 1979, again in 1984 with Kenny Rogers, then in 2011, and her last trip was 2014. Cheryl Brown, managing editor of Country Music Capital News, told Christy Reading about her admiration for Dolly, who played in Australia's country music capital, Tamworth.
While she was savvy, a businesswoman and all of that, she was real. What she gave us was real, and we all felt that she was approachable. She shared everything about herself. She shared her music. She loved doing collaborations. She sang with people like Julio Iglesias, Queen Latifah, Willie Nelson, Norah Jones, Kris Kristofferson, Porter Wagoner. You know, the biggest one of them all for me was Kenny Rogers. So just think she was incredible.
Farmer and Mayor of Narrabri, Daryl Tiemann, saw that show in 2014 and says a lot of people in Tamworth are remembering her today.
She's an absolute virtuoso, not just from a singing point of view and a composer, of course, but she played the saxophone, she played the violin, she played the guitar, she played the fiddle, she played all of these instruments. I do remember one point that had us all in stitches, and she paraded across over the stage and she said, I just want to thank you all for spending so much money to see me perform. And she turned and looked at the audience and she said, but it costs a lot of money to look this cheap. And like all of us were in hysterics. It was very funny.
Yeah, such an incredible sense of humour she had. Yeah.
And you know, in Narrabri Shire, we've also got the Imagination Library, well supported by businesses and charities and other people around. But it's had a massive impact in Tamworth. It's had a massive impact in our Narrabri Shire. And even the school teachers all remark on how the kids are now opening books properly and now starting to learn to love reading. And Dolly, that's a true legacy that Dolly's left us all.
Dolly partnered with United Way Australia to bring the book program to Australia in 2013, making it the fourth nation and the third continent to launch the Imagination Library.
My dad didn't get a chance to go to school, so he was so very proud of me when I started the program. He was prouder of the fact that the little kids called me the book lady than the fact that I'd worked so hard to become a star.
Dolly also donated $2 million to help people in the U.S. affected by Hurricane Helene in Florida, the Tennessee floods and the Sevier County wildfires. And she helped a lot of musicians. When she toured Australia in 2011, she was supported by Australian country music duo Busby Maru. Tom Busby told Karen Wilson about his reaction to her death.
Pretty much gobsmacked. And obviously we got to support her, Busby Maru. It was the most amazing experience. A couple of young boys from Rocky flying down to the Hunter Valley and playing two sold-out shows to, I think, 15 or 20,000 per night. And then getting to meet her, it was just phenomenal.
Gosh, what was it like meeting her?
Oh, it was unreal. I mean, I still remember the conversation. She told us that she wound the window down of her tour bus and listened to us, and we sounded lovely. And then as we walked away, she said, well, what's your old names again? We said, Busby Maru. She goes, well, good luck in your careers, Busby Maru.
Dolly's nephew, Brian Seaver, says she did that everywhere she went.
I first went on the road with Dolly as a kid, getting a taste of the road life in the early 1980s. Dolly opened doors not just for me, but for her entire family to reach the potential we didn't even know was possible. Dolly also opened doors for generations of singers, songwriters, musicians, and dreamers from every walk of life and across every continent. By her example, we believe that anything was possible.
Melbourne singer-songwriter Ella Hooper reflected on Dolly's achievements with James Glenday on the ABC's News Channel.
3,000 songs, 3,000, like comprehend that number, 27 number one hits. I've had one number one in my life, and that's enough to, you know, die happy. I think there will come a time where we appreciate, or the mainstream appreciates more and more, how acerbic, how clever, how witty, the strength of Dolly's writing. It's second to none. And the work, like you said, she's done more for nature protection, more for early childhood literacy than any other rock star I've ever been aware of. So we love you, Dolly.
Brian Seaver talked about Dolly's last wishes.
Dolly called me and said she wants to rest in a beautiful bed of plush cotton because after a life wearing heavy rhinestones, she finally deserves to be comfortable. Rest in peace, Aunt Dolly, and may God bless you all. She will always love you.
If I should stay, I would only be in your step of the way. Bittersweet memories, that's all I am taking with me. Goodbye, please don't cry. We both know that I'm not what you need. Hope life treats you kind, and I hope that you have all that you ever dreamed of, and I wish you joy and happiness, but above all of this, I wish you love.
Dolly Parton there singing I Will Always Love You. Yes, we should certainly have some more Dolly Parton music on the country. Thanks to David Claughton for that report. It's coming up to 8 minutes to one here on the country. It's time to go to markets. And first up to casino cattle.
Good afternoon. There was 1,400 head of cattle yarded, that's up by 150, consisting of a large percentage of young cattle, mainly weaners, and a fair penning of cows. Quality of the weaner cattle was mixed, with some good runs of well-bred cattle through the sale, along with some plainer grades. Good falls of rain saw increased demand from southern and western areas, resulting in restocker weaner steers selling 20 to 30 cents dearer, depending on weight and breed. They sell from 466 to 616 cents to average 540 for the medium weights. Restocker weaner heifers, however, experienced larger rises of 40 to 50 cents. They sell from 394 to 515, with the medium weights averaging 465. There was only a few yearling steers, and they topped at 494 cents. There was insufficient numbers of grown steers for a quote. Grown heifers topped at 400 cents. The cow market improved by 10 cents, some sales more. Two score medium weights, 320 to 355. Three score medium weights, average 362. Heavy cows range from 362 to 395. And a strong demand for bulls topped at 408 cents. Doug Robson at Casino.
Thanks, Doug. Let's go to Carcor Sheep and Lambs now.
Good afternoon. Numbers fell by 1750 for 1580 lambs. Quality was varied throughout with some well-finished lines along with the plainer lambs, and there were mostly trade and heavyweights, and a few new seasons were offered. Trade new seasons sold from 260 to 286, averaging 1140 to 1165 cents. Heavyweight old lambs were firm, 24 to 26, 283 to 310, 26 to 30, 316 to 335, averaging 1130 to 1160 cents. And mutton numbers stayed steady for 1500. There were some good heavy ewes penned, and they were $12 to $25 dearer. Heavy first cross ewes sold from 224 to 324, averaging 840 to 880 cents. And this has been Rob Pearce from the MLA at CTLX Carcor.
Let's go to Yass Sheep and Lambs now.
Good afternoon. Rain hampered numbers with only 3,020 lambs penned. The quality was very good, with most lambs presenting well and with weight. There was a larger run of new season lambs, a mixed run of trade weights, and good numbers of old heavy lambs. The market sold to stronger trends. New season trade lambs, 20 to 24 kilos, 259 to 279. Heavyweights, 293 to 326, and they averaged 1145 to 1180. The old trades were 10 to 12 dearer, 20 to 24 kilos, 241 to 261, an average 1060 to 1080 with some drier lambs in the mix. The heavy lambs were in demand, and the 24 to 26 kilos, 294 to 315, averaged 1150. Heavies to 30 kilos, 298 to 331, or 1080 to 1120, and extra heavies reached 358 to average 1020. Mutton numbers eased to only 2,000. The prices were dear, lifting around $20 a head. Crossbred ewes topped at 310 and merinos 263, and most range from 810 to 850.
And Graham Richard with that report. Let's go to Cowra Sheep and Lambs. Rob Pearce is there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael. There were 2,900 lambs, down by 850. Quality was very good for the extra heavyweights. There were mainly heavies penned and a run of trade weights. And 1,100 new seasons were offered. Trade new seasons were firm, 20-22 kilos, 248 to 269, 22 to 24, 272 to 288, averaging 1150 to 1160 cents. Heavyweight old lambs were dearer by 10 to 20, mainly due to extra weight, 24 to 26, 309 to 310, 26 to 30, 311 to 332, 30 plus, 343 to a top of 429.20, averaging 1050 to 1105 cents. New seasons to the restockers, 205 to 245, and mutton numbers fell for a very limited yarding of 325. There were some good heavy first cross ewes, and they sold from 234 to 318, averaging 770 to 880. And this has been Rob Pearce from Cowra.
Thanks, Rob. Let's go to Mossvale Cattle now.
Good afternoon, Michael. High-yielding yearlings to process reaching 614 cents or almost $3,000, and heavy cows lifting 15 cents with the highlights of the 1,000 mixed-quality cattle. There were some outstanding runs of grain-fed yearlings suiting the trade, along with some good lines of well-bred weaners, and there was an increased number of planar types. All the regular buyers, with the addition of a southern cow buyer, were operating, selling to a strong market. Trade steers 450 to 614, heifers 450 to 580. Feeder steers 10 better, with one pen making 579 to average 528. Heifers to feed, price unchanged, averaging 477. Young steers to the restockers lifted 15, 465 to 628. Heifers price unchanged, 375 to 525. Heavy cattle firmed to a few cents easier. Steers 440 to 580. Heifer stopped at 470. Two and three score cows firm, 250 to 388. Heavy prime cows jumped 15, topping at 430 cents per kilo. This is David Kent at Mossvale for MLA.
And let's go finally to Singleton Cattle now.
Good afternoon. Rainfall totals of 5 to 15 millimetres across the drawing area failed to dampen graziers' enthusiasm for taking current market rates, with Singleton agents penning 773 cattle, up 200 head on last week, and reversing the trend seen at most other selling centres this week. Light steer calves sold from 532 to 642 cents a kilo, averaging 622, to be upwards of 70 cents a kilo dearer. Light heifer calves, 22 cents a kilo better off, selling between 415 and 546, and they averaged around 497. Medium weight yearling steers to lot feeders remain firm, 500 to 586. Heavyweights over 400 kilos improved 29, making from 472 to 540, with quality and numbers a contributing factor. Yearling heifers to both restock and feed sold anywhere from 350 to 526, whilst local butchers paid up to 526 as well. 100 cows penned with restockers pushing processors in the lighter two scores, ending up 8 to 18 cents a kilo more valued than last week, and they sold from 222 to 368. Heavy 3 and 4 scores jumped 6 to 19, trading between 380 and 396 cents a kilo. Angus Barlow for MLA at Singleton.
And that's the market information for today.
You're listening to The Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And just reiterating the main stories on the program today, there were calls for the Minister of Water, Rose Jackson, to impose an immediate Section 324 embargo on all floodplain harvesting in New South Wales as a result of revelations in budget estimates on the 19th of August. The Greens say the current regulatory framework is so fundamentally flawed that compliance cannot be reliably enforced. They're worried about reduced downstream flows, degraded river health, and the ecological, cultural, and economic foundations of communities across the basin being affected by those moves there. And the other sad news today is the death of Dolly Parton. Tony's texted in from Armidale, say he's an old man sitting in the kitchen there with tears in his eyes. We'll always love you, Dolly. And Phil from Mudgee as well, saying enjoying the show, just listening in the car in Dubbo, waiting for a doctor's appointment. We played Dolly and he's brought tears to his eyes. You wouldn't be the only one, Phil. You're listening to The Country Hour. We're heading up to news time and 1 o'clock.